Thank you, and good afternoon. Today I'll tell you a story. It's a love story, right? It's a true story, and it's a story between open source and proprietary source software, and which we think it, you know, does have a happy ending. And the narrators of the story, will be Pano, that'll be me, Gopi, that's the gentleman there, which is, you know, if you've got any questions later, you ask him, not me, right? And Mike, which wasn't able to make it, and well, I'm sure he's watching us from home. Hi, Mike. Right, so I'll start with some background, what was happening in around, you know, 2015. So we had a product that, we had the server and the client software, right? And it was the network manager, which was Oracle-based, and it was an LRS engine. So how many of you know things about LRS, Linear Reference System? Not you, Seth. No, apart from you. Right, okay. So, right, okay. Good. And then we had the client, which was a special, you know, special data manager, it was called, and it was an ArcMap 9 extension, and it was desktop. And so before I go, that's why I ask you about LRS. I'll just, you know, briefly background what an LRS is. So it stands for Linear Referencing System, and it's a method of locating something along a linear element, okay? Usually from a known start point. And in our case, in roads, the linear element was invariably, you know, a piece of the road, and the event can be anything that's on that road. And events can be physical items like, you know, signposts, like, you know, safety fences, all of that, a road characteristic, like, you know, speed limit, or it can be like any true event, like, you know, not like a traffic accident. So the location, that's like LRS 101. Location is the distance between the start point and the event. Okay, and in a graphic sort of way, you know, this is a small road and starts usually here with an intersection and it ends there, another intersection, and has a name. That's what's the way that we model it within the system, and has a name or code, and it has a length. Okay, which means then that if a signpost is 1.8 miles along that road, right, A123, it's around here. Okay. And there's a computing process used to locate items along, you know, linear networks, and it's called dynamic segmentation. I'm just mentioning it here. You don't really care. But usually, you locate things along routes, or routes for the Americans, or some Americans. Anyway, and so, which is made up of lots of different segments, okay, of roads and intersections. And that may, and that's where the modeling sort of challenges start, is that they may not start at zero. No, okay. Might not start at zero or at the end or start of the intersections that may overlap or may have gaps, okay, or may be circular, which means that you don't know where the start is, okay, if you want to locate on the start or end. Okay? And events may also be located not just from the start of a route, but also from other events, okay? So this is what we have, two different linear location methods rather than systems. And sometimes they're used in LRM, LRS are used interchangeably. Again, not something that you need to worry. But also, another challenge is what happens when you have all your mileposts, you know, at the correct mileage, and then, you know, there's a road realignment and a new housing estate is built, and then all your mileposts are just wrong, okay? Now, our LRS engine was dealing, you know, deals with all that, okay, and more to that. Like, it can handle any network. Got a flexible network model. It's not just for roads. You can have like rails. You can have like water networks. You can support multiple LRSs. You can have, you know, it's user configurable at name and attribution, so you can name your network, and, you know, you can use any naming convention that you want, and you can also model the datums, which is the smallest unit on the network, but also datums, linear chain datums that make up routes, or non-linear, sort of just a bunch of buckets of datums, or even that you make a group, or even a group of groups, so you can have like admin type groupings. Okay, You can also have temporal management. The full network history is maintained. You don't delete things in our system. Nothing gets deleted, just end dated. And you can, so which means that you can undo edits at any time. Okay? And it supports all the circular routes, the Gaussian routes. And another thing that, that separates from other like software is that it's a logical first approach. So it's the logical model that that we deal with mainly. And also it has a geometry as an attribute. So we just delete the geometry as just an attribute of the network rather than what defines the network. And that's make it really, really fast. So it was all good, but we had, you know, problems with the UI. Okay? It was a desktop, it was dependent on Esri technology. And you know, interoperability in general was an issue. So what we wanted was to be web-based and to be open, as in open data, open standards, and to remove any Esri dependencies. So this guy comes along and he says, like, you know, what if I told you? Well, he didn't do that, but you know, he could have. But you know, but basically, we discovered open source, right? We discovered that was the love at first sight thing. And because we used, you know, open layers, and we use open layers where we switched to OL3 immediately after release, and we're currently working on working with open layers 4, and we're looking to move to open layers 5. And we also use map server. So those are the main two components, if you like, you know, the Force4j components that we use. So open layers and map server. And it's we use of server side, you know, spatial publishing. I've got this item here, which I think I've put it on a different and on another presentation I did. You know, why do you didn't use GeoServer? Because we didn't know enough Java, right? And it was a Java thing. Well, mainly one of the reasons. Also, it's quite, you know, it's more heavy. You had to do, it has its own login system and all that. But you know, that's it. That's all I know. No one shoots me down, right? Okay. So, but you know, but also, you know, Bentley is basically, you know, a map server. You can use C# interfaces, and Bentley is usually it's mainly a Microsoft shop, okay. And with map server, we used dynamically generate map files, and I'll explain this next slide what I mean by that. So, and this is the architecture in a sort of, you know, very high level architecture. So, you know, on the left hand side, can I use that? Maybe not. Okay, but on the left hand side, you can see, you know, client browser. We've got open layers. We started with using Angular. Now we're moving slowly to React.js. We got a sort of, you know, a React.js wrapper against Angular. You know, we'll move full Angular eventually. Then in middle tier, we got the application. It's classic, you know, three tier architecture. You got the web API. At the bottom, you got, you know, the map server that will create the map files, you know, from the database server. And it's mainly Oracle, as I said, but we're looking at migrating as well to SQL Server as well, Microsoft. And so what do I mean by dynamically generated map files? Because we're Oracle, and that's one of the things that we want to get moved away from as well. This is Java. We don't like Java. We started with Map Builder. So Map Builder is an Oracle Java application that all the Oracle spatial tables, they have, you know, special metadata tables in Oracle where you can set styles and labeling and all that sort of thing. And then, so once you have that, then we have like a conversion mechanism, if you like. So as soon as the user logs in, and because we got also this, you know, role-based security, basically creates a map file for each user dynamically. So that's what the dynamically generate map files means, okay? And you know, one of the reasons we want to get away from that is that now we're using, obviously we can display Oracle, you know, spatial tables as layers, but in order to get, you know, shape files and anything else that map server supports, we have like, you know, config files, you know, that you say, okay, I got this shape file and I got this raster data and I got this background maps, and we want to get away from all that. And so basically, again, what, you know, I said, when you log in through a PLSQL API, it's, you know, it reads the map file, the map builder, map definition, the tables, and then it combined with a, you know, custom Bentley layer metadata, and then allows implementation for all base security. And what we also did, you got views. You can have, you know, implementation of temporal views. So, you know, it's not just what the user can see, but we'll see only active data because everything else will be end dated. And we also use, you know, runtime substitution variables within the map file. So we can use, we had like, you know, quite clever thing doing about, you know, having lateral offsets, which basically offset linearly offset event data off the route. Okay. Map server file. People are aware of map, you know, map file, map server, what they are. Yeah. Okay. Not you, Seth, again. But you know, it's a map server file. It's an ASCII file that contains definitions for the map container extent. This is a very, very sort of, you know, again, super simplified view. So you got the map container extents, then you got, you can define the symbols, the layers, and all that. And it looks, so the generate map file looks something like that. Okay. So you can see that that you know, we got the web metadata and all the WMS requests, the WMS WFS request, and that's what a layer looks like. Okay, and you can see that here's like your normal, what you see, the WMS metadata kind of keywords, but also some of our own keywords. Okay, so this is, and remember again, this is a map file per user, okay, which gets deleted afterwards and whatever. So you know, it knows exactly. So if it's editable, that for another user might not be editable and all that. So we, you know, we get everything, all the business logic within the map file as well. Okay. So some of the things that we had to change and do with map server. The first thing that you know, well, they told me that, you know, we need stronger encryption in map server. So because that MS encrypt, you know, was not secure enough. So what we did, and this is Windows only, we had a new build of map server where we used the data protection API, DB API, if anyone knows about it. And that, this is from a fork map server, and I think actually this one has been committed back to the source. I'm not sure, but you know, it's there on the repositories. The other thing is, we're Bentley, right? We're Bentley, and we're supposed to be like the DGN guys that you know, we can deal with DGN. Problem was, map server wasn't supporting DGN V8, the latest DGN format, okay? That was a bit embarrassing. So, you know, we're also talking about V7. So what we did, we used, because it was easy for us, we used a proprietary Tiger libraries, again, within a build, a custom build of map server, okay? And now we can support our own format, which is great. Another thing we did, and that was open layers mainly, and with maps, I'm not sure if it's a map server problem, a WFS problem, all that, but basically what we wanted, you know, it's a linear referencing system, so, you know, you click somewhere and you just want to see the offset, you know, the measure value along that line, right? So the problem was that and when you do that, the layer is a JSON or a GML layer, it's vector data, right? The problem was that the coordinates that we're getting back were just XYs, never Ms. Map server would just never get either as a JSON or GML, wouldn't get the M values. So what we did is like every time you click on it, and it's actually quite quick, you know, I thought at first it wasn't quick, but you know, copied it. We fetched, you know, measures from the, so as soon as you click, you got the XYs, and then you just go back to the database and get the measure value. Okay. I'll show you some examples as well. The other thing that we used to do is that we want to trace, so we create new networks, right? New pieces of network, and sometimes invariably you want to have, you know, you got your shape file or something else that you know, put on your map, and then you want to trace along that shape file, right? The problem was with open layers, the snapping agents and the draw agents and whatever, you know, they didn't support interactions, you know, the tracing until the first vertex I will see, not the whole geometry, okay? So what we had to do is have, you know, custom draw method that we also call private. I know it's a bad thing, this, but sorry, guys. You know, it's we call private methods, private open layers methods. And so you end up with this, right? You can see that, you know, the mouse goes up and down, doesn't, you know, it gets locked onto that element, right? And then as soon as you go back and forth, you can see you go from here, you can click there, and it will just go there, right? And then we can go. Yeah, it gets locked, it goes through here, and it will just automatically get the trace and then all return back. Okay, so those are, you know, showing, because I think they're just quite cool things. And, you know, one of the other sort of small things is, again, shape files. We, you know, to add the shape file, you shaped JSON format. That wasn't supporting polyline M values again. So we just did a small change. That was the whole thing, and a great thing, and that's, I think that's why our developers loved the open source stuff, because they can actually have the problem, you know, we'll just go in and fix it. Okay, so, and that's what it looks like. I thought I wouldn't do a video, or, you know, I'll just show you some screenshots. So this is what the AWS AssetWise Linear Referencing Service, you can see at the bottom, the top left is. So this is what it looks like. This is your catalog where you got all your different map layers, and you can see you got, you know, sign risk like an asset, and you got the parking, another asset, linear asset, and then you got the federal functional class, and you get all the symbology that, if you remember, that comes from map builder all through to, you know, map server and, you know, the map file. Okay, so you have all different layers there, as well as background layers. Now, the whole editing stuff, because there's a, okay, the whole editing stuff is just it's like a start editing, stop editing. So I have clicked on start editing as when I did the start editing. It goes and has got the stop editing now. It will download. It will allow. It will ask me which layer do I want to edit. This is the datum layer. It will download this vector data, and then you got that cool little radial menu, which is context sensitive depending on the layer that you're editing. Okay, so it will be a different radial menu. It's an asset. It's an event. Okay, and this is just like, you know, advanced search. You know how you can do an advanced search on a layer type as well as on the network. So I won't find sign bridges that, you know, sign bridges that equals butterfly along that network. Okay, very quickly then, what's ahead? A lot of things are ahead, but, you know, what might interest you is that we're trying to do a map server configuration tool. As I said in the beginning, we want to deprecate map builder, you know, the Oracle sort of Java stuff that can be used across all our apps. And basically, it's another map server, you know, yet and again, another map file configuration sort of, you know, editor, but mainly for our purposes. And it would look, this is just the screenshots, it would look something like this. Okay, so we can have your map, and you got all your layers for your map. And then for each layer, you can have, you know, the basic, the layer name, transparency, blah, 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 the labeling, the symbology you can see there. And but that, at the end of the day, will go and add entries to tables, right? And then the application, any application, can come and create the map file. So just labeling what it look like, and you can always, like, you know, just use map file expressions, and that's what the class definition would look like. Okay, again, very much work in progress, but, you know, this is the mockups basically that the developer are working out of. And I think that's that. Questions to Gopi. Thank you. That was good on time, wasn't it? Yeah.
At some point, I think it was around slide 25 or so. Yeah, because I noticed. You said that you had to use a restricted license plugin for Map Server because didn't. Yes. Did you consider, instead of using that, extend the current support, so the map server supports version 8?
Yes, we did consider that. We're still considering this. The thing is that, as like always, we need it now, and the easiest thing was like get the library in and, you know, just do it. But yes, we are considering. I mean, you know, yeah, we already have put, you know, things in map server, sort of, you know. We have done some enhancements to Map Server core. Maybe that, you know, once they have time, they'll do the next thing. Yeah, it will be this.
You said you want to move away from Oracle towards MySQL or MSSQL. Are you considering Postgres, Postgres as well? Or is there any reason for doing only MSSQL? Thank you.
Or even MySQL Spatial.
MySQL, yeah. Well, look, no, we're not. We have considered Postgres as well. The thing is, we do not want to deprecate Oracle. We want to deprecate Oracle Map Builder. We won't deprecate Oracle anyway, because we already got a lot of users that are using Oracle Enterprise. They got a lot of APIs and things that, you know, work on that. But the other thing that our users have, and you know, at least DOTs and big sort of you know highways agencies, is SQL Server. None of them has a Postgres, or we never been asked to do Postgres. So yeah, no. Yes, yes. Anyone else?
We're good on time, so we can take more questions. So, anybody? Yep.
No, it's an easy one. You said about when you have the linear referencing and you have the history and you have something changing, how are you storing the history? Is it using Oracle table versioning? And are you going to do the same thing in MS SQL Server? Or is it your own custom tables for history?
It's custom tables history. It's basically anything. If you end date something, you get a new copy of that, and then the other thing gets end dated. Yeah.
No more questions? So in that case, we will wait a few minutes for the next talk, and thank you very much.